Queensland 33, the Crusaders 28, the first victory in Christchurch for the Reds in 25 years, Matt Tuohy. The last time, 1999. Can you believe it?
Yeah, look, I dare say there's probably a few guys there who in the Reds team who weren't even alive then. So it's pretty remarkable stat when you think about it. And yeah, look, I think I probably tipped the Reds in that match. However, I knew the Crusaders weren't going to be as poor as they have been early in the season. They weren't. They were really good. It was a belter. It was a cracking game.
Yeah, you think about Tim Ryan, 20 years of age. So he would have been born in, 2004, maybe 2003, depending on his birthday. Crazy stuff. He scored a double, five tries in his last two matches. What a way to start your career.
He's making it look easy, isn't he? Good God. And fair play. And one thing noticed in this game was he was actually in the rights thing, wasn't he? He was on the left wing last week and now he's on the right. And so, yeah, nice and versatile and able to finish. So that's, God, that's exciting. And two tries in Christchurch is pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing indeed. So we're going to be catching up a little bit later on with one of the stars, probably one of the best recruitments right across Super Rugby this year, Jeffrey Tumunga Allen, always an interesting, entertaining man and a bloke who's played for a couple of different countries in international rugby as well. So looking forward to that. At the Brumbies, they got across the line. It wasn't necessarily pretty, but an important win over the Fijian Drua, and maybe the less said about the other three sides, the better. But Junior Wallabies under 20s rugby championship, that's heating up. A couple of games to look forward to there, and the Wallaroos will get their season underway on Saturday against Canada. And the Sevens, the women fall short in the final, the men once again losing to New Zealand in the semi-final. So a lot to look forward to this on the Raw Rugby Podcast. Hey, mate. Very good to have you here joining on a Monday. You, my friend, were pulled out of a Mad Monday celebration. You might have gone a day early, but thanks for giving up your time.
Yeah, look, it's a commitment to the podcast, isn't it? So we finished up yesterday. Our season's done now, it's been quite a successful one for our club. And then, presentation day today, I should say. And then you can start to get away from you at some point. But I was very glad I've had plenty of experience in smoke bombing early.
Yeah. So you were in Osaka, you were saying, just before we started the podcast. That's a pretty big city. So I'm sure you would have been able to have a bit of fun up there.
Yeah, it was a long day, actually. So we took the Shinkansen down early morning yesterday to watch the boys play. And we may have started hydrating a bit earlier than allowed, but it was good. So we watched the game there, then back on the Shinkansen, back into Tokyo. And yeah, just finishing off the year really well, which other people were as well. Actually ran into the one and only Bernard Foley last night, and we were just talking all sorts of Norse rugby chat about all sorts of stuff, where the game's going. But it's great to see him. He's a good man, and someone I hope we get back in the environment at some point.
He's been in great form, man of the match just a couple of weeks ago, leading the ship for Kubota. They won the season, the title last year, a massive breakthrough win. He's still carving up. Who do you see taking out the title this year in the Japanese League One comp?
Yeah. So look, Kubota had a great year last year. Obviously, won. Bernard was injured for a lot of the season, but his impact when he came back, a month, 6 weeks ago, it was astounding. Like he really kind of clawed it back a little bit, and they ended up beating Suntory on the weekend, which is no mean feat. But yeah, look, the competition's favourites are definitely Panasonic. Robbie Dean's coached a couple Aussie boys in there. They actually went through undefeated this year, and they even beat, I think they might have beaten the Chiefs when the Chiefs came here a preseason friendly. So they're a quality team. Wouldn't look out of place in any competition in the world. So yeah, that'd be hard to beat them.
Yeah, Marika Korobetti, part of that, but other guys like your Dylan Riley's and your Jack Cornelsons, I think it is. So plenty of Aussie flavour in amongst there. Well, appreciate you getting out of your cap presentation. I'm sure you would have been missed there. Perhaps your family might be more pleased that you're back home nice and early to do a podcast. a lot to dissect out of the weekend that was. A great win for Queensland, a solid win for the Brumbies, and three pretty, you could say embarrassing, but
yeah,
disappointing, ugly defeats.
Yeah, you just did say embarrassing. And it was tough to watch. And look, it not completely unexpected. You know, we're talking about a Waratahs team who playing probably the hardest assignment in Super Rugby at the moment in the Cake Ten. So I think they're always going to be up against it. The Blues coming to Melbourne, potentially a banana skin for them. But I think that it was quite comfortable, wasn't it? Like a huge difference in from first half to second half, I thought.
Yeah. Oh, I just think that the Blues were playing with probably too much width, maybe changing their tactics a little bit in the first half, and then they decided we're going to go down lane run channel and just went through them a little bit more.
Yeah, and I tell you what, maybe teams gone past Blues teams didn't have that kind of, you know, feather in their cap. I think the fact that they could kind of adjust at halftime, I think they scored three or four tries off pick and drive.
Four.
Exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So four tries in the second half anyway.
Yeah. And that'll put them in good stead later in the season, particularly as the weather gets a little bit colder, potentially a bit more rain, and those finals games are often won, you know, through the middle. So I think there's some good signs for the Blues.
Yeah, well, you look at the try scorers, PJ Sheck, I think that's the tight head prop. Talia got two, and then Patrick Tuipulotu and Sam Dowry, the replacement.
He got two, didn't he?
Yeah. I think he got a double in the last 10 minutes, 2 and 4 minutes. I don't think he'll ever repeat that one again. So fair play to Dowry there. But 38-11, it was probably the result you expected, maybe just not in the fashion, but that's a – it's a long way back for the Rebels here. I know that they're sixth at the moment on 24 points, but they're hanging on, and every week they're going further down. They've gone from fourth to fifth to sixth now. The Highlanders, if they were to get a win against the Crusaders this week, wow, it would put a lot of pressure on them, because the Drua have got a couple of games later on in the season at home where they'll be sensing victory. So the Rebels, I think they need a couple of bonus points at the very least. One win would get them through to a maiden finals berth.
Yeah, look, I think the draw was very favourable for the Rebels, which we've said. But as we also said, they could only beat the teams that were in front of them. So,
yeah,
I think it'll start evening out a little bit. I think they've probably done enough just to scrape in, mainly because of the teams below. Like, I don't see the Force kicking on. I think the Crusaders, as much as people want them to, I'm not sure. I think the Drua will get there. Highlanders might be a little bit of a, you know, hit or miss, but, you know, such a big final, you know, when you got three quarters of the competition goes into the finals. It's, I really wish they would have a look at that. But, you know, that being said, it would be good to have another Aussie team in there.
Look. I completely agree. When you've got 8 out of the 12 qualifying, it doesn't quite make sense. But what we've seen actually in the last couple of years when they've done that is that sides like the 7th and the 8th, they haven't been the upsets. I know the Reds pushed the Chiefs last year when they finished 8th after losing up in Fiji against the Drua. They managed to give them a fright, but they didn't really look like they were going to win either at the 60-minute mark. So perhaps it all evens out, and the competition needs as much coverage and broadcast opportunity as possible. So, yeah, I can see arguments for and against it. It probably gives teams like the Waratahs and the Force a bit of incentive in the last month rather than, you know, hanging it in and thinking about next season. So a lot to play for. Let's start with the positive news. The Queensland Reds. That's their third win in 5 matches against New Zealand opposition this year. It's the first time they've done that since 2013. The two defeats they've had have been off the last play of the game against both the Blues and the Hurricanes. But here's a couple of stats for you. Since 2021, there was one win. The for and against was minus 84. In 2022, 0 wins from 6 matches. minus 85 was the points differential. Last year, Brad Thorne's last year in charge, one win, five losses, four and against of minus 77. In 2024, what do you think that figure would be over five matches?
Yeah, well, as you said, well, they're three wins now. The losses that they've had have been an absolute bee's dick. So they're probably in the positive, I'd assume.
Positive 30. And like, yeah, that's nice. They've totally flipped the script this year under Les Kiss, which is just awesome to see. And it's probably the manner in their playing. Like, these aren't just necessarily pick and drive tries. They're doing that. We saw Tamunga Allen, Fraser McWright, a similar sort of try. But then you see the long range tries from Tim Ryan as well, which was just awesome through the hands for the Reds' second try against the Crusaders on the weekend.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really good stat, actually, the comparison in terms of against the Kiwi teams, because, yeah, sometimes you get, yeah, I think that's a real reflection that I think everyone can actually feel that they are on the up and really reflected there, and their losses have just been, they've been so close. So, you know, it's a team that's, they're doing some wonderful things. I think that's, you know, that's fair to say. And I was actually really excited by a guy like, and you've mentioned him in earlier pods, Ryan Smith, you know, someone who's kind of just a little bit of an unsung hero in that team, doing some of the hard graft. And I think, you know, we all, of course, Harry Wilson playing amazingly and gets a lot of the plaudits, and rightfully so, but there are still some, unsung guys that really recruited well, particularly up front. With the loss of Taniela. They're a good rugby team. They're a very good rugby team.
Well, you think about three of the props that they've brought in the last 2 years. Penny Ravi came in 2023, I think it was. And then they followed it up with Alex Hodgman, who didn't play on the weekend, but we had on the pod just the other week, and Jeffrey Tamunga Allen announced at the same time. Let's not waste any time. Let's get them on. Let's get Jeffrey Tamunga Allen on. Hey, awesome to have Jeffrey Tamunga Allen join the Rural Rugby podcast. And Jeff, what a win. You're celebrating a 33-28 victory over the Crusaders. How about it? You scored a try on that. That's a heck of a result.
It's an amazing feeling for the club and to have our fans over there fly over. We had a few people, a few of our fans and family and friends, they actually all flew over and to get the win for them and not only for them, but for the boys as well. It was just an awesome feeling, man. 25 years, making history is a big thing. It's funny because we went around the circle and before, you know, in the huddle, and Skip was like, hey, who here has won? Here. No one put their hands up, apart from me.
So I was like, and then they were all like, I think that gave them a bit of like, damn, let's do this. Like, come on.
So that's a pretty good flex. It's a pretty good flex too, isn't it? Yeah, I've been here, done that.
Fair enough. And it's very hard to come by down in Christchurch. So, yeah, it's a very special win for us as a Reds family. So, yeah, man.
Other things that are hard to come by are tries for front rowers. I think last week we saw, who was it? Owen Franks got it. He had like 5,000 days or something in between drinks. Has it been that long for you, or are you... You're not the typical prop, are you? Like, I love it.
I would like to say I'm not the typical prop, you know. Just I do have a lot of attributes as a good tight head, you know, cauliflower ear, big appetite, high skinnies. I mean, low skin folds, speed. You know, so yeah.
But it's good though, because you definitely like. I was looking at your social media earlier. You're like a cool character to have in the game. Like, I know when I got through, that was kind of pushed out. You know, like, and you didn't want to stick above. How important is it that you kind of encourage creativity of players on and off the field?
Yeah, well, it definitely is a new thing now. Like, you look at, like, social media, for example, it's very much pushed, you know, and being creative. But I think the narrative of just being yourself, and I've always tried to hold true to myself and who I am, very much the person you see on social media is the same person you get. And I don't show everything on, you know, out there and all that, but I am who I am. I'm very genuine.
That's on
and
OnlyFans, to... isn't it? The
hey, yeah, yeah. What is that? What is it? Nah, yeah, so, yeah, bro. And like, it's funny because I used to crank videos back in the day, do little vlogs and stuff and that, bro. And like, people used to like, even within organizations, used to say, hey, don't do that. Like, it's distracting, it's this and that. And I was like, bro, I'm not involving anyone else or doing this or that. But it's cool to see, you know, the creative outlet which I can use and just be myself. Yeah,
it's an interesting point because having worked in Aussie rugby now for nearly a decade, and you don't see too many characters in Australian rugby. Like, you don't see the Nick Cummins. Like, they're few and far between. It's so true. When you arrived at Queensland, did you get the sense that you were a bit of a fish out of water there, or did everyone look at you with four eyes, or did you feel comfortable and did the players actually start to embrace and enjoy what they were seeing?
Well, two things. Like, obviously, I come with a lot of experience, so they might have said stuff behind my back. but another thing was, like, one of the boys actually told me we went out for dinner, and then as a team dinner, and then he goes to me, oh, bro, before you came, you know, I checked out, you know, who you were, and I saw your social media, and I thought, oh my gosh, this guy's a loser, like, because of what I do and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah. And then he turns around to me and he's like, mate, but I just got to know you, and you're just a genuine awesome guy. I was like, oh yeah, I'm like, I am a person, you know, end of the day. But I mean, coming here with my character and stuff like that, like, I don't mind it. Like, we need it, you know. But I'm not saying that everyone needs to have the character and be out there and all this stuff, which I'm not. But it's important to be a person outside of rugby as well, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, for your own headspace, being, you know, being someone outside the rugby as a rugby, but from a supporter's point of view, just seeing that. It increases interest into the game. It allows people feel tighter. I know Billy Meeks, I had a similar case with Billy Meeks. He's very active on socials. And I hadn't met him, and I thought he was a little bit off. And then you go meet him. He's like the nicest, kindest guy. And I think it's sometimes we struggle realizing that people can be two things. Like, we can't, you know, you can be that, but you can also push hard in scrums. So it's...
But it's like that too. Like, we've been so molded through rugby and like the old school narrative of what a rugby player should be and look like and act like. It's kind of like that's the thing that's frowned upon now, but times are changing and there is a balance of it, you know. Don't get me wrong, like, I don't like young boys trying to chase or girls trying to chase clout and without doing their core role first in terms of playing rugby. You know, that's if you, you know, a professional or trying to make it, like, you have to make sure that your main thing is your main thing. You know, don't be trying to do all these videos and not do the work or be on everyone's podcast and not, you know, be about it in the real world. You know, like, first and foremost, I know who I am as a rugby player, but I'm a husband first, a father, and then a rugby player. And I am the best at all those things. You know, so I try and be the best. So, yeah.
It's really powerful actually hearing you say that and having more men talk about that stuff because, the views of masculinity have been quite, you know, narrow, and then to have someone who's such a character but who still cares about their family and their responsibilities and and does their job, no, it's good, man. I really enjoy it.
Thanks, bro.
Hey, Jeff, how have you found arriving at the Reds, and we're coming towards the last month of the regular competition? And and I remember when I sat down with you a couple of weeks before the kickoff, and I said, because you told me, I can't believe I'm back in Super Rugby. I didn't think this would happen. Yeah. And I said, well, is this just a paycheck kind of thing at the end of your career? Oh, and you were like, no, bro, that is not the case.
I'm even going to say it right now, hell no, mate.
Yeah. Are you loving it? And what have you found from the Reds? Because they were a side that underachieved in previous years, particularly against New Zealand opposition. But your three wins from five matches against Trans-Tasman opposition this year.
True. I think, coming, like we were talking earlier in the year, it was very different for me coming here. It's taken me a while to settle into back into Super Rugby. You know, mate, you know what it's like overseas. Like, you go overseas and it's like, it's awesome. You know, like, it's very different. You've played Super Rugby for so long. You go over there and you adapt to that lifestyle and how it is over there. So coming back to Super Rugby was a big shift for me personally in terms of my footy. But for my family, it was awesome. Being closer to New Zealand for, you know, my kids and my wife, but not so much in New Zealand in the backyard of everyone's pockets, you know. So having that distance, but also being close enough, it's really good for me and my family. And then having settled into Super Rugby now, it's awesome, man. Like I took a while to settle because it's almost like I had a funeral for, it's weird, but like had a funeral for Super Rugby. Like I was done. Like I was dead set done with Super Rugby. Mm-hmm. Said to my wife, like, I'm not coming back because I feel like I've done everything that I needed to do, you know? So coming back was like, I had to open it up again. And like, yeah, but it's been awesome. It's fun, man. Like, I think my age has definitely been a bit tough, like, having to keep up with all the young bucks. But nah, it's cool, man. I'm having a lot of fun. And the Reds, historically, like, obviously weren't as good as, you know, playing against New Zealand teams and stuff. But that was the difference which I wanted to make coming here and coming and helping with. So
winning environments often make it so much more enjoyable as well, doesn't it? Like you feel you're getting rewarded for the hard work and the sore knees are for a reason.
Yeah, for sure. Like winning helps, then I think being a part of building that winning culture makes it even more enjoyable too. You know, obviously, like, they've had a tough few years, but, like, coming specifically to help this club not only rebuild, you know, what they're trying to achieve and what we are trying to achieve in terms of winning some silverware, because that's end of the day, it's about championship, right? Like you said, I'm not here for a paycheck. I'm here to win. And the only way I know how to do that is through culture and through getting around the boys. And when the going gets tough, you know, come out swinging, because you have to. And I think, and hopefully that's what fans have seen through what we're trying to do with the Reds. Like, when our back's against the wall, we come out swinging. We're not giving up.
Well, mate, we could see the ecstasy and agony in the blink of an eye just a couple of weeks ago with the Blues, and that was great footage on the sideline when you were up and about. So I'm sure everyone's enjoying seeing you play at the moment. What about some of the other guys? Because you, Penny Rabbi, Alex Hodgman, are relatively new to the club. You've got a lot of experience, the three of you. And then you're working with this crop of youngsters, the guys like the Zane Nongles, and there's Massimo Deludis, who's coming through, who's got a lot of potential himself. Can you talk to us a little bit about those guys as well, and why you think it's so important to have older, experienced heads in the front row to be able to teach and mentor these younger guys coming through?
Yeah. Well, as well as teaching and mentoring, we're trying to compete, because we're not just these old heads that come and feel like we deserve to start or we deserve to play. We said from the outset, we want to be the most competitive front row within ourselves first and foremost, so that not only can the team succeed, but we can get better as individuals. And I've really pushed that. And I know Guppy, Alex Hodgman, he's got that dog in the man. Like, he's very, very competitive. So having him at Lucid and me at Tyhead is actually great, because at training we butt heads and stuff, which is cool. We almost have a running tally of who can do the most hits and stuff like that, like within ourselves. But it shows that, yes, I'm trying to develop these young players as well. But also, if you know, you ain't taking food off my plate, like, bro, you gotta get your own, you know, like. And I really want to help create that doggy dog. Like that, you know, we talked about the social media side, right? And like having characters outside of footy. But end of the day, like, in terms of front row, this is the dark arts, man. Like, we're dealing in the dark arts in terms of front rowers and loving scrummaging and just putting your head in dark places in terms of just doing the nitty gritty. Yes, I score a couple of tries and stuff, but I'm happy not to score tries if I'm doing the work and getting bloody ears and bloody nose and cuts, split eyebrows. Like, I get a lot of gratitude out of that because I know that I'm doing the work, you know, and hopefully that's what we're doing with the young boys.
Just for the record, Matt, 7 days between tries, mate, between the Blues try in the first half to this, to the Crusaders.
I actually knew that. Jeffrey just messaged me before and asked if he could bring it up, that he's actually scored back to back. So
I'm glad you got my message, bro.
it came through.
This weekend, there's quite a few ex-Reds players in this Rebels lineup, and they've gone through all sorts of adversity this year, but there's also a guy called Taniela Tupou who'll be coming to Suncorp Stadium, a bloke that loves playing in Brisbane, but also I imagine there's going to be quite a – if you're thinking about scrum battles and winning the game line battle there, there's no bigger really task.
There is none, man. You look at the bloke, there's no bigger bloke. So, I know it'll be very emotional for him coming back to Brisbane and playing at Suncorp. But, you know, I've stepped into that jersey now, and no disrespect to him, but it's personal for me because I'm the new kid on the block. So if he's coming back, all due respect to him. He's an amazing world-class player with Daniela. And I know the guy too, he's good friends with everyone, right? But him coming back shouldn't affect what we do as a team. So he's one individual, and I know there are a lot of players that have left to go to the Rebels, but we're a new team this year, and they're coming into what we're doing. So they're most welcome to come come to Suncorp, but you know, it's not going to be like welcome home. It's going to be a come and see you later.
You're not going to roll out the red carpet. It's culture around this weekend as well, and that's a great thing to celebrate in the game. Yourself and Taniela, there's a lot of people with Pacifica heritage, and that's a great thing. I want to ask just around the Reds have managed to probably exceed expectations against the New Zealand sides, but you've fallen short once or twice with games that you think you'd go, no, they'll win this game. Have you got an idea of why that consistency perhaps against isn't quite there, and why you elevate and go to a new height against New Zealand teams this year?
Oh man, thanks for reminding me. That pisses me off. Those losses, eh? in terms of your question, bro, I think obviously the chip on our shoulder, being an Aussie team playing the New Zealand teams, there's always that chip. You know, Matty, you'd know. That Trans-Tasman battle was you get up for it, right? So I think we just have to still carry that chip and be almost have this mongrel attitude in terms of this is our house. Anywhere we play, you know, it's territorial. It has to be like that within the Australian rugby comp. And I think when we lose sight of that, obviously it shows in our results. With the Brumbies, 1 point, getting whooped in the first half against the Force. You look at that, and we have to take ownership of that as Aussie team, playing an Aussie team. So, yeah, if we can convert that chip just to being consistent, yeah, it will go a long way. Not only for this season, but season's coming.
It has been a little bit of a silver lining in the sense that anytime there's been a real big kind of game, the Reds have turned up. But then I guess finding that consistency, realizing that you get 4 points for playing, you know, in Perth, you still get 4 points, the same amount of four points as you get if you play in Christchurch. So it's cool though. I think from a fan's point of view, it's very much you see that there's a lot of potential there, and it's just a few things that need tightening up, I think, rather than maybe other teams who just don't have the capacity to win those games. So it's a good issue to have.
And I think it's I forgot to mention, it is still the element of youth, boys being inexperienced in terms of turning up week in, week out, you know, not just expecting others to, you know, make a big play or do a big thing every week. You know, it's everyone collectively making sure you turn up individually to nail your role, do your job. And then big time players make big time plays in those moments, you know? So making sure that as an experienced player, bringing that and pushing that and helping our leaders navigate, you know, what we're doing on the field, how we're managing our emotion, you know, not getting too riled up at the wrong times, and, you know, which kind of pushes mistakes and stuff like that. So I think managing that youth with the experience is a big part of those narrow losses as well against the Aussie team.
Well, it's great to see the consistency against the Kiwi sides. Nonetheless, after a few years of struggle against our Trans-Tasman cousins in recent years. Hey, Jeff, it's a Monday night. I'm sure your kids will want to say goodnight to you if you haven't already. But thanks so much for coming on the pod, giving up your time as well. And best of luck Friday night's game against the Rebels at Suncorp Stadium. So get around and get there to watch these guys go.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, man.
Jeffrey Tumungan-Rallon there, and he's an entertaining guy, always up for a chat, but he's also a damn good player, and he's shown that this year, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's doing some wonderful things, and I was just thinking, actually, we're a bit forward or front row heavy on this potty, aren't we? Excuse the pun as well, you know, we've had Sikopi, we've had a lot of guys in the front row, but maybe they're interesting, as you heard then, he, you know, interesting guys, got a lot to say, and have been around, but maybe we need to get some backs on the pod.
Yeah, maybe you might have a bit more conversation to offer up. We'll work on that, but thanks for the feedback there, Matt. look, it's Tar week, Tar Brumbies week, and the Waratahs are coming off the back of a really heavy loss to the Hurricanes. They've got a huge injury toll. They're not going to be welcoming back Max Jorgensen anytime soon because he's got a hamstring injury. In contrast, the Brumbies, I'm not quite sure where James Slipper's at, but he came off and looks like he wasn't 100% either. But you imagine that the Brumbies, this is a game where if they have and harbour a top two ambitions, they definitely need to win this one and perhaps even with a bonus point. But the Waratahs just, even though it's been, I think, 11 games since they last beat the Brumbies, a lot of those matches have been decided by less than a try. So you can't completely write off the Tars.
No, definitely not. And especially in New South Wales, I think the fact that it's there definitely levels it a little bit more. However, up front, I just think that's really where the Brumbies will look to assert themselves. And knowing the injury toll that the Waratahs have got at the moment, they might find it a little bit difficult to kind of respond to that for sure.
Yeah, we saw the Hurricanes just suck that first half an hour, offloads at will. They were playing with such pace, hugely quick ruck speed. As a 10, as a 9, you've spent so much time in the halves, inside centre as well. Can you do anything? Because Will Harrison just was not sighted basically in the first half, a couple of clearing kicks. But can you do anything when you're a playmaker, when you're getting no ball?
Yeah, you can. But it's the extent of which, like, there's that clip going on social media of that scrum that led to, I think, the Hurricanes' first try. Like, it was just genuine, pure dominance, tight head. And that makes everything a little bit more difficult because then you start realizing, all right, if we knock the ball on in our half, it's going to result in a scrum penalty, which is then going to result in kicking the corner. And so you have to be really conservative. So you probably need maybe one or two out of the three, you know, with your kick and your line out and your scrum to be firing. Otherwise, it's too difficult. And unfortunately, a team like the Hurricanes, who are so dangerous from, you know, counterattack as well. So if you're kicking the ball to play in the right areas, you're giving them a free run as well. So, yeah, you can see why it was a tough night.
It's scary to think that the Hurricanes were missing Asafa Moore. Xavier Niumea came off the bench as well, as did Geordie Barrett and TJ Perenara. So they've certainly got a fair bit of depth, but also attacking prowess about them. That injury toll, like we've made mention of it, it's got even worse. So Julian Heaven, the hooker, is out now. It means that the first four choice hookers are now out of action for the Waratahs. There's just two props hanging on there, and Harry Johnson Holmes and Hayden Thompson's stringer. You made mention of that early shove there that they got turned over possession, and I think it was Proctor that scored after just 3 or 4 minutes. But I thought that scrum was almost symbolic of how Waratah started. It just looked like they missed the jump And the scrum for the rest of the game actually managed to hold on really well. It was just that first one where they were totally smoked off the ball. Jake Gordon fed it, and he didn't see it on his side of the scrum, I don't think at all. They just missed it completely.
Yeah, look, and it probably was indicative of the game. And you think of the Brumbies game as well, where the dominant team kind of ran away with a little bit of a lead and then maybe just took the foot off the pedal just for a little moment. And then, you know, when required, kind of stepped up a little bit. So, the Hurricanes game, I think if you watched the first 20, you knew the game was, you know, kind of done and dusted at that point. So, look, it's not, you know, many teams have gone to the Cakes Inn and had their pants pulled down. And I don't think the Waratahs should be feeling too negative about it, because ultimately they're not at that level at the moment. They can still compete. And, you know, if they can get a good performance against the Brumbies here and start actually getting some points, might see them climb up the ladder just a little bit more.
What's your favourite and most hated ground in New Zealand to play at? Because the Wallabies are going to be playing at the Cake Tin later this year. Mm. If you're a punter, you probably need to book those tickets sooner rather than later so that you're not paying too much out of your pocket. Would you give them any hope there, or is that a graveyard for Australian rugby as
no,
well?
No, it's definitely not a graveyard. In the sense that the results are usually a little bit closer. Your memories or your favourite grounds and all that are usually dictated by the result. You know, hate Eden Park for obvious reasons. I managed to win there once out of about 20 goes. So, Caketon's interesting because it is very windy, and so it can kind of go both ways. And the Hurricanes traditionally are a pretty strong team as well. You know, I think most people probably enjoy Dunedin because of the roof and you know, with all due respect to the Highlanders, barring a few years, you know, they're usually at the bottom end of the table for New Zealand teams. So it's, there's some good grounds there, but, some bad memories in New Zealand as well.
Speaking of memories, what about Brumbies Waratahs clashes? You would have played probably at least a dozen, I would say. Mm. They weren't always easy ones. You think about those years in 2014, 2015, they were tough against the Michael Checker coach Tar sides. Is there a moment, a memory, a player, a collision that stands out in those kind of contests?
Yeah, plenty. I think it was 2015. We had a good old ding-dong battle down in Canberra, and there was actually a decent scrap. Will Skelton actually kneed me in the nose, broke my nose early in the game, and then we got in a decent scrap with them, and my hands got tied behind my back, and Tolu Latu's just throwing them, absolutely belting me. And then, you know, he got sent off or whatever. And then the next day we had a Wallabies.
Standard, mate, standard. That look, with Tolu Latu getting a card.
And he's a mate of mine. Got so much respect for him. But then the next day for Wallabies, we had a Wallabies camp, like a get-together, one of those camps. And the first thing they made us do was me and Tolu had to get up, one, hug it out, but then we also had to do like a improv skit just to kind of break the ice. So, yeah, look, they were big games in around those years. They were very much test match feeling, and I think probably saw that earlier in the year between the Reds and the Brumbies, kind of had that little test match kind of feeling as well. So, always enjoy them. Plenty of stories, plenty of feeling, and, they're good fun.
I'll tell you what, that I'm glad I wasn't involved in any of that. Skelton and Tolu Latu, geez, they're a couple of big boys. You need to get yourself further out in the air.
I don't know what I was doing there, mate. Yeah.
Can you see any form of upset, or is this just going to be the Brumbies kind of getting the business done and showing their class?
I can see the Waratahs putting a decent performance together. I really can. I think the Brumbies will win, but I think it'll be within seven. I think the Brumbies will definitely try and, you know, go through the middle a little bit more. They'll be disappointed with their scrum against the Drua. That kind of was the only reason that the Drua kind of stayed in there towards the end of the match. And so I think they'll be up for it. The Brumbies really need to prove that they're a top two team, and they just cannot give games like this away. So I think, they'll definitely be up for it.
Were you like me? Were you thinking that the Brumbies were going to at least lose the lead in that second half before Luke Reimer, friend of the pod, came on.
Yeah.
A couple of big steals, and he scores a try as well. At that point in time when they were holding on 21, I think it was 21-17,
yeah,
4-point game, and all the momentum was with the draw. The Brumby scrum was getting smoked. You saw guys playing on the wrong side of the scrum. You saw yellow cards there to Harry Vela. It looked like the Drua weren't just going to come, but spoil the party, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Like I said, it started off kind of stock standard with a few tries and very direct tries as well. Ikitel, obviously, I think he might have got the first one. And then Allen, I think, after that as well. So they were very direct. And you thought, oh, yeah, this will just kind of keep on going and, you know, the service will resume. But then, the Drua, they're a tricky team for a lot of people. Yeah, look, I think the Brumbies will be really, really happy that they didn't drop that, because I think they were definitely well below their best, particularly in that middle part of the game. But for the fact that they get the 4 points is huge, particularly for their aspirations for a top two.
Yeah. So news today, but also it's been coming for a couple of months, Darcy Swain off to the Western Force. I think it's a bit of a blow for the Brumbies. They've got to be careful here because Caden Neville's 35. You're losing one of your test locks. You're losing another in Darcy Swain. It means that there's just Nick Frost out of those three, which were managing to manage those minutes so well. But even up front, James Slipper, 34, turning 35 next month. They once upon a time had Scott CEO, James Slipper there. Slips is only going to have one more season. And then Alan Alatoa. And there's a couple of props coming through. But it's really hard to replace guys with international standard blokes to bring off the bench and just be able to rotate and manage your squad so well.
Yeah, definitely. And you look at our two best performing teams at the moment, the Reds and the Brumbies, and you mentioned it earlier, they've all recruited well in the tight five, and with the Reds particularly, you know, at prop. Brumbies, yeah, they'll need to find that tight head lock who is like a Darcy Swain, who can break through the more, who, you know, is good on that right hand side of the scrum, who has that little bit of kind of, exactly, a bit of mongrel, that tight head lock who you kind of look at and you go, oh, I don't really want to, you know, get hit late by him or something like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm sure they've got plans in place. At the end of the day, if we go from five teams down to four, it might solve some of those issues potentially. It's a big loss. When I saw that this morning, I was like, oh, geez, that's I saw Darcy as someone maybe, you know, captaining the Brumbies for a few years. So it's a big coup for the Force.
Well, yeah, he skipped them earlier in the year in the absence of Alatoa, and when Ron Lonergan missed a game and came off a bench in another one. So, yeah, it's a big blow, and it probably did surprise a lot of people. I just think it was for a couple of months. They were working out whether or not Darcy Swain was going to get a Rugby Australia top-up or not. And in the end, I think he has, and he's managed to get the price tag that he wanted, because he even admitted today, he spoke to the Canberra journos down there, and he said, look, it took a bit longer than I wanted. My form wasn't great last year. And he was pretty upfront with that. And that certainly would have played a role when you're Joe Schmidt and you're thinking, do I offer a guy a national top up when I've got to be so selective about who's performing or not? And we know about Darcy Swain's troubles with discipline in 2022, which then rolled into injuries as well. So that was an interesting one. And it's also interesting with Isaac Rodder and his future, because at the moment he's not got a national top up his sleeve. And so he's had good coin for the last year and a half, but he's barely played. Now he's managing to get back onto the park and string a few games together. We know the class of him, 2019 World Cup squad member, started there alongside Rory Arnold. So it's a big month ahead for him if he wants to get a top up, and if the Force want to keep him, because I can guarantee you a lot of these guys struggle to cop going from big coin to less coin when the opportunities to make that same coin exist overseas and you're not going to get it in Australia. So, yeah, it's a big couple of weeks for Isaac Rodder.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, you're right. Look, he the one thing I do like about the Force is that they've been willing to invest in a few older guys, you know, around the park with Kurt Lee, with Michael Wells, with Nick White, and Isaac Rodder could have that. So I think there should definitely be a big enough carrot there for him to hang around. And, you know, if they, as you said in your article earlier today, if they can get a bit of grunt up front, and get a bit of ascendancy there, it'll allow the shiny toys to kind of do their thing out wide. So yeah
you can't otherwise. The Force, they were never really going to be in that game, and we saw it. The Chiefs just way too quick, powerful. They might have been missing Sean Stevenson, but when you've got Etni, Nanai, Satoru, just seamlessly shifts to fullback and carves up. They're a formidable looking side, the Chiefs. I don't know. Who do you think's the favorite between Hurricanes, Chiefs, Blues at the moment? You can only pick one. Who's winning? It's just those three.
If it's those three, it's home ground advantage for me. It really is. It's because there's nothing between them. The Blues on a wet night in Auckland at Eden Park will pick and drive through all those teams. You know, Hurricanes probably can match them there, but the Chiefs on a good night are as good as anyone. So I really think it's whoever finishes at the top of the log will probably win the competition. I know that, God, that's not really that remarkable saying, is it? But I think the home ground advantage is huge.
Mate, you felt it in 2013 when the Chiefs host that final. It's just tough to win away from home. And we've seen other sides experience that too. Switching gears a little bit, Wallaroos this weekend, Saturday, it's also a double header. So the Waratahs, Brumbies game. Before that, the Wallaroos will be playing in Canada. A big opportunity, first opportunity with Jo Yap and her side, a couple of new changes last week that she announced. So it's a great, I think it's a smart decision to have the doubleheader into Sydney, into Waratahs game. Hopefully it sees not only several more thousand turn up to watch both games, but they all decide to rock up, close the business hours or just before, rather than at 7:30. So yeah, it's a really exciting opportunity.
Yeah, look, I really hope I really hope the scheduling of it is done smart. One thing I've found where, you know, doubleheader on paper looks great. You know, we're trying to encourage team, you know, our fans to see two games, but you know, by the end of the curtain raiser to start of the main match, there would be such a big gap because they would have to do warm downs, warm ups, all this kind of thing. If we could make it, you know, 5-10 minutes or whatever in between, and the teams just have to warm up in the sheds, or if you're at the SFL, you've got plenty of field out the back, let them just go warm up there like they did in like we do in Super Round.
We're in Super Round, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a slightly bigger gap this time, but it's not so big that you shouldn't be able to enjoy yourself over a beer or a soft drink or whatever it is, because with the reconstruction of the Sydney Football Stadium, there's plenty enough space, and it's not in the middle of winter yet that you're still going to have a good time.
Yeah, look, I just hope they do it well, because as I said, double header, good tick, well done. But like practically speaking, can people get there and then dug off to the loo like at halftime, almost in between matches? That's all we want, because we need eyeballs, you know, for both games. Something that happens in the future.
At the very least, you want some entertainment in between as well, like another draw card. And that's something that other codes do really well. And I question rugby every time I go to matches, and I see, you know, whip cracking last year in the Wallabies matches, and thinking there's got to be more than this, please. Junior Wallabies are also playing Tuesday night fixture against South Africa, followed by a Sunday game against New Zealand. They got well beaten by Argentina last week to start off Nathan Gray's side. That's probably not a huge surprise given that there's been a shift. There's very few players backing up from last year, but not the result you want.
No, not well, like, and with all due respect to Argentina, you look at that and you probably go, right, we need to win that game. And then if we can pick up one of the next two, that would be, you know, a pretty decent kind of outing. But to have New Zealand and South Africa coming up after a decent loss is, yeah, not ideal. Not ideal at all. I think it's great that they're doing this. The TRC for under-20s, because for so long, the under-20s up in Europe has just been the gap's just getting wider and wider, I think, in terms of that. So it's good that they've now got our teams in one city, and hopefully we can get, you know, more and more games and give these guys a good kind of lead into the World Cups.
Yeah, and you do hope as well with, you know, not that this is the one where you should be throwing all the money at promoting the game and advertising and so forth, but probably need to see a little bit more of that all four different parties work harder to ensure that there's a media presence there, just to shine a spotlight on it and allow for some of the new players coming through a bit more of an identity. Speaking of which, I think there will be a player in the next couple of days from a Super Rugby franchise coming and joining in. Stay tuned on that one ahead of the Sunday fixture. Also, the National Seven sides, the women 31-21 losing in the final to New Zealand, an injury to Matty Ashby, who's just such quality on both sides of the ball. But an awesome result given that they were already missing Charlotte Kaslik, Shani Smale, the list goes on and on. They missed out, you know, Soraya Paki and Lily Dick got injured throughout the tournament as well. So they finished it with just 9 or 10 fit girls. But that's a good result. It allows them to a bit more depth to be exposed ahead of the Olympics. But Tim Walsh will be sweating on the fitness of Madison Ashby and her leg injury after coming off early in that second half against the Kiwis.
Yeah, look, I think you're right, though. Yes, you want to be winning these tournaments, but with the Olympics at the end of the year, to get your depth tested like that, to get the girls who may not have previously played against New Zealand in a final, getting them some crucial minutes, that's huge. That's like, at the end of the day, let's not lose sight of the main thing, and that is the Olympics. And it's good. Yeah, I tell you what, it's really exciting seeing both of our teams in the top four. And you know, the men had a cracking win against I think it was South Africa.
Yeah, in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, that was brilliant. So it's it is really, really exciting. I think getting people minutes who, you know, not necessarily who we might have to rely on later in the year, is a big tick, big tick.
Yeah, so the men falling short in the semifinals and then getting kind of obliterated in the in the bronze medal match against Great Britain. But we saw Teddy Wilson, Michael Hooper get more minutes as well. So there'll be some more changes on their way as well. I'm sure people like Darby Lancaster are going to be eyed up, and whether or not Corey Toole is as well remains to be seen. But some selections and similarly for the women, the men were missing Morris Longbottom and Matt Gonzalez. So to be able to still be up at the pointy end without a couple of your main playmakers is a really good thing. Other bit of news as well, Friday afternoon, the Docker got through with the Melbourne Rebels after a creditors vote. Look, it essentially got down to a split vote, and then the administrator, who was PwC, they voted for it. It got ahead, got approved as a result of that. It's not surprising that the administrator who put together the report voted for it, having already said that they would do that. What it essentially means is, yes, they're still alive, I suppose, but as it was explained to me by a pretty senior official just over the last 48 hours, these are separate things. Winning the Docker and getting the Docker vote across the line is very different to still the Melbourne Rebels being alive and playing on beyond 2024. So hopefully there's not too much false hope in that, but I think just the sooner the better. Rugby Australia, it's so clear that they're not going to – they had a proxy vote. Clearly they didn't want to be able to show everyone who they were voting for.
Can you tell me what that means, proxy vote? Like, so does that – because I think that's probably what most people were hoping to get out of this was – we've all had the inkling that, you know, RA have been wanting to get rid of the Rebels. And then, so this proxy vote, is that exactly that? It's keeping your cards close to your chest, or?
I think they've done that on purpose so that they weren't there when the official vote was counted, but they'd already cast it previously. That's my understanding of it. Yeah. But it just allows for them to fly under the radar a little bit more. But it's so obvious that Rugby Australia don't want the Rebels to be around come 2025. I think the time has come for Rugby Australia to make their position clear, because players, there's 40, 50 people down in the Melbourne Rebels that need to have their future sorted. And, you know, there's other franchises in Australia like the Waratahs who are thinking, well, we're losing Ned Hannigan, we're losing Lachie Swinton, we're losing a lot of other players, Mark Nwanga Niduasi, there's others that are linked to go elsewhere too. Who do I plan for? Because they need to set the Waratahs up like they need to set the Reds up, the Western Force and the Brumbies if the Rebels to go. You can't afford to lose these players either. And they also want to look at what their future is. Schools, you know, we know a lot of there's a lot of parents throughout this. We know the coaching staff, the high-performance team. Everyone is acting like that the Rebels won't be there. There's only 20 contracted players there for next year at the moment anyway. It's time that Rugby Australia come out, articulate their vision and give a sense of direction and leadership around what the game looks like, because for too many years the game has gone from one crisis to another, and pretty much since I started reporting on the game in 2015 we've seen that with the Western Force being culled into Israel Folau, into COVID, into the broadcast crisis. So a lot to... the next couple of weeks, there's a lot to come, but some really important discussions as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would, like, obviously there might be legal ramifications of them showing their hand, but I agree. Like, we know that, like, the fans, we all know that the game is in a precarious position and has been for quite a while. I think we're old enough that we can deal with that, but to show the vision, be quite transparent with it, you know, look, this is the way we're aiming, this is why. I feel like you're just treating the community in a better way rather than just kind of radio silence. Oh, I heard this. And then little whispers in the media here and there about financial viability. And it's like, we know what's going on here. Like, we know what's going on. It would be nice if they gave us something to get behind, because as you say, like, we're all well aware of our the issues we have in the game, so I don't think there's any use in hiding it.
Yeah, you're right. There is plenty left to go under this bridge over the coming weeks, but hopefully a decision really soon on the Rebels' future, so it just allows that clarity to go forward, and you just don't want this one dragging on into finals footy or even closer to the test season too. So players want their future. Carter Gordon being linked everywhere really at the moment, but he's not the only one. There's a lot of players that are considering their future, and these are the challenges that Rugby Australia have got to consider. And we could keep talking for many, many hours, I say, about the troubles in Australian rugby, but awesome to be able to celebrate some of the great things at the moment, the little wins and Queensland, what they've been able to achieve through the first two-thirds of this regular competition's brilliant. Hopefully the Brumbies continue and we can see that edge in their scrummaging and perhaps set-piece stuff that comes to fruition, because you need more than one side that's challenging at the pointy end. You need two or three. So another big round of Super Rugby ahead. You've got a couple of weeks left up in Japan before you come back to Oz as well. So have you got any, you know, trips or holiday plans in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, trying to get out to Kyoto is the plan, but it's we'll see how it goes. It's a little bit busy at the moment because it's just getting into summer here, so a bit flat out. But yeah, hopefully get to Kyoto before I come home and start enjoying life back in Australia for a little while. So yeah, now there's a few weeks to go. Very excited.
Start making your own coffee, probably more like it, I'd say. It. 2 before 10, isn't it? There's another shout out. Get around
it.
Speaking of getting around, get around the Raw Rugby Pod on iTunes, Spotify. Please rate, review, let us know what you're thinking. Thanks so much for your time, Matt. I'm Christy Doran. Thanks for joining the Raw Rugby Podcast.